Buenas noches, Radiolandia. This is your host, Xochitl Bernadette Moreno, coming to you with this week's edition of Radio Olin here on KPFA's La Onda Bajita. Tonight, I come to you from Cusco, Peru. Hoy noche tenemos la gran honor de hablar con Dr. Jimena Malaga Sabogal. She is a visual anthropologist, and she's a teacher at the Festival de Cine Latinoamericano de Lenguajes Originarias. This is the fifth edition of this festival, and it's such an honor to speak with you tonight. Muchísimas gracias. Gracias por estar con nosotros, por compartir de su experiencia como maestra, como directora. Thank you for being with us, for just sharing about your experience, not just as a director, but also sharing in the workshops and helping to bring up the next generation of filmmakers here in Peru. So if you could just greet our listeners.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. No, good night, good evening, good morning, everyone, depending on what time it's going to be. It is actually an honor for me to be interviewed here. We are in Cusco, Peru, and we're in the middle of the fifth edition of this festival, the Festival de Cine Latinoamericano en Lenguas Originarias. And this is an effort that not only brings together movies and films, which is usually what a festival revolves around, but also that brings together people who want to be filmmakers, people who want to reflect about filmmaking, people who want to problematize certain things related with filmmaking, especially when we're talking about oppressed languages.
So let's begin there. Let's speak a little bit more about the mission of this festival, how it began, how your involvement came to be, what's happening here in the Casa de Cultura here in Cusco, Peru today?
So this is actually something interesting because it's not only happening here. This is a festival that's decentralized. So it's happening at the same time in five different places. Here in Cusco, in Pisac, which is 1 hour from Cusco, in Machu Picchu, in Pucallpa, which is in the Peruvian jungle, in the Peruvian Amazon, and in Trujillo, which is the northern Peruvian coast. And this festival starts actually in Trujillo a few years ago because it was noted by the festival director, Roger Neira, that there was not a single space in a country in which native languages, indigenous languages, are so widespread, spoken by so many people, and still there was not a single space in the festival circuit that reflected that. So of course we can participate in other festivals, we can, you know, like compete at the Festival de Cine de Lima or in Trujillo or wherever, like there are many spaces, but in many cases what happens with movies or shorts made in indigenous languages is that sometimes they don't count with the same like budget, they have more limitations, they are not always, but many times based in like community production practices and whatnot. So to make a film with those like reduced, you know, possibilities, to make a film that can make it in an international festival circuit or, you know, it's just more difficult. So it's not the same just level of, yeah, in terms of budget, production, etc. As far as I understand, what happened was that Roger and his team decided to create a space that was specifically for films that were made in indigenous languages. So the main like criteria is that it has to be at least 60 or 50% in an indigenous language. And I actually learned about this festival a few years ago when I was doing the festival circuit with my last short film, Rimanawasi, which is about Quechua radio speaker in Puno, Peru. And we got a special mention last year at last year's festival in the like Peruvian shorts category. And so this year, Roger, whom I never met in person, actually, I'm going to meet him in Machu Picchu now. And he called me up and he asked if having won like last year, if I wanted to come give a workshop or take part in one of the juries. So I ended up being also in the jury of Miradas Latinoamericanas. And it's been actually a first for me because I come from a bit of a like parallel career. I'm an anthropologist, and I started doing documentaries kind of as an afterthought at the beginning. It just happened. It wasn't something that I had in my plans. I didn't go to film school. But in all of these last few years with Rimanawasi, which had a great like festival run, I started to know this festival circuit. Like, there's a whole world out there, and I hope this is not like controversial, but it can be very toxic, the festival circuit. You know, the just especially like the big international festivals, where I feel like sometimes we end up being like the, you know, like a quota, like something to check off a list that they have a Latin American movie, or that they have a movie made in Quechua, or, you know, made by a woman. There's like these checks. And on one hand, that's important because you need to have that representation and you need to have that diversity. I support that. But on the other hand, what ends up happening sometimes in these big international festivals is that there's like a ghettoization of certain types of cinema. And I felt that, I won't say the name of the festival, but I did feel it, where we were in like parallel selections, no, parallel programs, where all the films were, for example, included an indigenous language, or were made by women or whatnot, but they were not considered in like the main competitions. And so I felt like sometimes we were there for, you know, like the picture. And still it was cool to be there, of course, like I won't deny it. But all of this is to say that spaces like these, no, festivals that are particularly focused on indigenous languages, or there are festivals that are, for example, of community cinema, or whatnot, they just end up being more like friendly spaces, no? Mm. That where, you know, if all of the films that are here are in indigenous languages, that means that your film is here because it's good and not just because it's in Quechua, mm. No? Which is also like a nice thing to film, to feel as a filmmaker, right? Because at the end, it's like we make movies because we want them to be seen. We want people to see them. And also something that happens here, and I know I'm talking too much, I'm sorry. It's the, you know, the teacher in me. But another thing that I feel is very like touching in this festival is that there are many people who are coming to the screenings who maybe don't have like a much of an interest in film or in cinema, and they are Quechua speakers, and they just heard through like the grapevine or something that there was a festival that had films in Quechua and Aymara and, you know, Shipibo and Zapoteco, and it's something that also creates this connection, you know, that creates a community. Where, for example, I was like overhearing a few girls talking yesterday, speaking with each other after the screening. And they were like, oh, did you know? Like, I was Googling. They started Googling because there was a filming, I think, in Zapoteco. And they started Googling. And they're like, did you know they speak like over 50, like 60 languages in Mexico? Did you know that? So it ends up being also something that just brings people together, and that gives that possibility of imagining even an international community of indigenous language speakers. Mm. And that's also, I think, very, very touching and very important. Mm.
Well, I like this idea that you bring up about the tokenization that you experienced on the festival circuit, and the need to create our own spaces where it's not about, you know, checking a box, where it's truly about the merit of your story, the merit of your art. Can you speak about how, you know, from your anthropological lens, how this is also mirroring dynamics that we experience as Indigenous people in society at large?
Oof, I mean, yeah, no, I won't play the anthropologist card, because if not, I will never shut up. But definitely, yeah, I was looking for the word before and I forgot, and yeah, tokenization is the word. But It has to do as well with something that we've been speaking about, not only in academia, but actually in the like political movements, within like activist circles and whatnot, about this, like, there's this fragmentarization of indigeneity, you know, like we can take this element, but we won't look at the other one. And it's been happening for ages. It's not recent, but maybe in the last few years, maybe the last decade, it just became more visible. Because something that there's actually a very classic text in Peru that also has been read like all around Latin America by Cecilia Mendez. She's a Peruvian historian who lives in California, I believe. But she wrote this paper that's called Inca Sí, Indios No. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very telling, though. It's like, yeah, we can take from that past, from the Inca past, we can, here in Cusco, you see it a lot, right? You can use a Quechua word for your brand, and it's going to be very flashy and whatnot. But that doesn't change the way in which we actually treat Quechua-speaking people or people from Quechua communities. That is not really changing. But there has been a big change in the discourse in Peru, and I believe in other Latin American countries as well, no? So there's this push, which is positive, of course, no? There's, in Peru, for example, there's been a huge effort from public policy to visibilize, to make visible Quechua, to intervene in certain spaces of, like, for example, recognizing interpreters and translators of Quechua with a formal certificate, or recognizing, for example, the public servants who are bilingual and who have been doing that work without a certificate anyway, like a person in a, you know, a bank teller or something. And they've been serving people in Quechua anyway, and now there's a certificate for that. And so it may seem symbolic, insufficient, whatnot, it's still a huge thing. Like, I've been in my research work, in my parallel career, I've been following these processes. And for example, I've seen like people actually crying after getting this recognition, like saying, well, I'm, you know, 50 something years old, I'm about to retire, I'm 60. And after all these years of, I don't know, working at a rural health center, all of a sudden I get this like additional point in my CV saying that actually I'm also a Quechua speaker and that makes me better at my job, you know? So there's been many efforts actually from the state, and I think we have to recognize that, because on one hand, yeah, there's of course like a long way to go and discrimination is still rampant and whatnot, but the Peruvian state is actually surprisingly taking many steps to address that. Again, insufficient, of course, but it's a step in the right direction, definitely, you know. And I see that as well with actually the funds that we have for film, you know? Coming back to film, which is what brings us together tonight, is that DAFO, which is the Dirección de Audiovisual, La Fonografía y los Nuevos Medios, that's the like institution in the Ministry of Culture that is in charge of distributing funds for film. And for the last 2 or 3 years, this is very recent, DAFO started a new fund, a new grant for film that's specifically for community cinema and for cinema made in indigenous languages. No? So that is also something that's quite recent and that is already giving fruit. No? We already see a few films that were made with this award and that are now in the international festival circuit. But yeah, it's just a very complex topic, I believe.
Well, thank you for expanding on it. I wish we had more time. So my next question is about the importance of filmmakers that are indigenous language speakers, languages that perhaps, you know, with Quechua and Aymara, there are many Quechua and Aymara hablantes, but we also know that there are many other smaller subsets of these languages. And what is the importance of storytelling by and for these language speakers? What is possible when that storytelling camera or microphone is put directly in the hands of these storytellers? And what's at stake if there aren't spaces like this?
Yeah, no, that's... I mean, I think that brings us back to the diversity question, and not in a check a box way, but in a sincere kind of honest effort. Because at the end, it is about, like, if you get more people, more different people to tell stories, you will get different stories, right? You will get more diverse stories. You will just amplify the possibilities of what cinema can be. Like, there's so many things that we haven't done yet that we can't even imagine yet, right? There's just, if we don't create those spaces, if we don't, also, again, this is like an activist effort, but if we don't participate in, on one way, teaching, but also just accompanying, producing, maybe helping in other ways for these stories to develop, I feel like this is also like a political responsibility in a way, that the more diverse people we get to make movies, the more diverse movies we will get. I don't know. Sounds like a trabalenguas, but it's kind of like that, right? And today in the workshop, we were speaking about something that's very interesting and very, it's a touchy subject, right? Like someone said, well, there's all these movies in Quechua coming out or whatnot, but the director was not a Quechua speaker or they were not from a Quechua community. And I feel like that is a touchy subject because on one hand, yes, the more people from the actual communities and native Quechua speakers or other origin, we're talking about any native language, right? Any indigenous language, that's great. But on the other hand, we are also aware because it's the 21st century and like colonization has been rampant for such a long time, that there's many people who lost the language for other reasons. So if we say, if you're not a Quechua speaker, you cannot tell a Quechua story, you're actually closing the door to many of the like granddaughters, grandsons of like leaders from a comunidad, for example. And that's also complicated, no? And I've seen that, for example, in the United States with Spanish, right? With this, like, are you a true Latino? Or are you really, you know, do you have a right to call yourself something or something if you don't speak the language? And it's like, yo, we are in a country and on a continent in which speaking an indigenous language has been looked down upon and, you know, absolutely vilified for so many years, that you cannot blame people for losing the language as well. Like, that wouldn't be, you know, that's just not, it doesn't go in line with what you're trying to say. So I'm always careful with that argument, you know. I feel like that usually comes up, actually, in conversations, no? Where people are like, oh, why are they making these movies and whatnot? And I feel like we shouldn't be very, like, it's just there's one step from that to talking about like authentic culture, and you know the topic of authenticity gets us to very like puristic definitions of culture. We don't really want to go there. Like that's not a good space to go. Mm. I believe personally. Mm. Again, that's like my own personal opinion. I don't think we should close that door, but I do believe that the question should be made. And that it also has to be made in the context of who gets paid for what when we're making these movies. So today we were talking about credits, no, and what credit you can get when you help as a translator or whatnot, and what does that imply if the director doesn't speak an indigenous language. Then actually you're not really a translator, you're kind of helping to direct. So there's many questions that have to do more with like authorship and, you know, what sort of credit you'll get. And that don't mean necessarily that that person shouldn't be making that movie. It's more about, if you don't speak the language, that means you need a team. How are you going to recognize that team? How are you going to work with that team? Is it going to be a community effort? Are you going to include them maybe in the writing of the script? Because it's not only about language, right? It is always like intertwined topics, and you cannot talk about language without, you know, including cosmovision, without including just the imaginaries that people of a certain culture have, etc.
Ay, claso, Kamati. Thank you so much. Radiolandia, you've been listening to the voice of Dr. Jimena Malaga Sabogal. She's a visual anthropologist, and we're here at the Festival de Cine Latinoamericano, and this is the fifth edition. So, in continuing our conversation, you know, there are so many rich films that are being shown. We have the ability to, last night was so powerful for me. I saw a film, excuse me, I think you were speaking about it in the Taller today, mm-hmm. About this transgendered indigenous person. It's a fictional film, and it's about their weaving and being ostracized by their community members. It really hit home for me in such deep ways because my uncle, you know, passed away, killed himself as a result of ostracization in Mexico from his gender and his sexuality. And so this was a topic that I felt like my family was still understanding how to deal with. I'm actually a fourth generation cinematographer in Mexico. And so these, seeing something so poignantly addressed, something that can be such a delicate cultural topic or that can be taboo, it's really heartwarming to know and to see that filmmakers today are having the bravery to go there and to go there in ways that really can have very deep cultural impacts. And you know, as you were speaking today in the workshop in the taller of dirección, it was important to think about this idea of responsibility as a filmmaker. And what kinds of stories am I telling? How are they impacting the communities, my families, you know, my family, my community members? And so I'm just wondering if you can speak about this idea of the responsibility in telling stories of both pushing the line and still doing ethical justice to our subjects.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, for me, that's like the big difference between fiction and documentary. All the other differences are slowly disappearing. No, there's a lot of docuficción now. There's many genres that are kind of in the middle. But at the end, for me, it is about who is the protagonist. And if the movie is about real people who exist right now and who are presented with their faces and their voices, or only their voices, because there are now many animated documentaries, if that story is real and it comes from a real person, that means there's real responsibility related to it. There's just an ethical imperative, I believe, about being faithful, being truthful. And of course, there's no such thing as objectivity. We've left that idea behind a long time ago. We don't pretend to it. We are always editing, choosing, you know, picking from reality and presenting a version of it. Yes, but that doesn't mean we're not responsible for what we're showing. And I feel like in this kind of relativization of documentary and in general of cinema, we shouldn't forget that. Yeah, I'm not being objective, I don't pretend to it, but that doesn't mean I can say whatever about this person who actually exists and who is showing their face in my film, right? Because there will be real consequences for this person. And it might be, you know, you say, oh, who's going to watch it? Like, let's say a documentary short, like what's the distribution rate of that? It's not very high, to be honest, right? It will be seen maybe, if we're lucky, by, I don't know, 4,000, 5,000 people, like we're not talking millions, right? But if that film is going to be shown in the community where it was made, which it should be, that's the first the first screening you should have of a filmmaker is always in the place where you made the movie. That means there will be people there who directly know your protagonist, who know their, probably know something about their life, and who are going to draw conclusions from what you're showing them. So definitely there's always a sense of responsibility that we should be accountable for, really. No. And today we were speaking again about this in the context of Indigenous communities and Indigenous language speakers. And I feel like this is, a tricky question, because you should always have this sense of responsibility. If you're working with people in, I don't know, with the Italian community in New York, or if you're working with the Chicano community in Los Angeles, or if you're working with the Quechua-speaking community in Queros, you should always be accountable for what your final product is going to be, you know, how is it going to represent the people that are there. But we live in a world with power relationships, right? So we cannot forget about that. It is not the same to represent, you know, like a white WASP, I don't know, banker from New York, than to represent a community member from Queros. It is not really the same. You should always be responsible. You should always try to be respectful with your subjects. Absolutely. I'm not saying that's not the case. But there is a bigger responsibility when there's a power relationship. And if we're not aware of that, then we're not being ethical, I believe. Mm.
And in these last minutes that we have left, I'm wondering if you can share just a few highlights. You said you were a jury member. And what have been some of the stories that have been gracing the pantalla here in at the Este Festival?
Oof, I have an absolute favorite, I have to say, so I'm very partial. Huachinango Rojo, it's a Mexican movie. It's 90% in Zapoteco, it's basically entirely in Zapoteco. And it's about women from a small community in Oaxaca who have this ritual of checking if they're still virgins when they marry. And one could say, and I give this as an example, not only because I love this movie, but because I think it's a great example of where documentary can go. Because this is a very classic topic, right? Like, this could be made in a, you know, documentary, an ethnographic film from the 1950s or 60s, no, about, I don't know, rituals related with blood in a community, wherever, right? It sounds very classical. It is not. It is actually on the verge of experimental. It has animation details. It goes into like oniric dream sequences at moments. So it really kind of shows where you can go with this, that even having a very classical, very important topic, no, that should be talked about, you can have a cinematographical approach that makes it, that brings it also home for the newer, for the younger generations, right? Because things are changing. People are watching many TikToks, and I'm one of them. I won't, you know, throw the first stone. I also do it. But our ways of consuming audiovisual products are also changing. Mm-hmm. We get bored sooner. Like, we're just, our attention span is terrible. And even me, like, I'm 38. I'm not that young, sadly. But even I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it sometimes when I watch movies, and I'm like, I'm catching myself kind of, I kind of want to look at my phone. And I'm like, oh my God, this is so disrespectful. I'm a filmmaker as well. And I'm like either falling asleep or looking at my phone. It's just a sign of the times. Like, we're not used to sitting in one place without doing other thing for, you know, 2 or 3 hours. We're just not used to it anymore. And so the new films that are coming out kind of have to address that. Mm. No, of course you can, as an auteur, a filmmaker, you can choose to speak to a very tiny audience and keep making your movies that are, you know, where you have scenes that are 30 minutes long and you have, you know, one eye looking at a field of grass or something. There will always be an audience for everything. Of course, there's so many audience members, but if you want to reach the younger people, if you want to, you know, make a cinema that's also questioning itself, that's reinventing itself, you have to look a bit further. And I feel like not only Huachinango, there's a few more in the selection that do that. But in this case, I just thought it was really interesting, like the combination of elements, the experimentation without going, whatever that means, and I'm making quoting marks right now, without going too far. Mm. Because again, no, I've seen great experimental documentaries, these non-fiction films, that are so experimental that they end up speaking also to a very tiny audience, right? That I couldn't, you know, bring my grandma to a screening of that because she just wouldn't get it. Mm-hmm. So there's always like this fine line, no, between wanting to do something that's innovative, that's, you know, showing a story in a different way, but also never forgetting that cinema is for people and there's nothing wrong with entertainment. And I feel like, especially in like outer cinema or in independent cinema, sometimes we pretend it doesn't matter, right? There's like almost this snobbish thing of, oh, well, I make movies because I want to and whatnot. And it's like, well, actually, you make movies because you want them to be seen. Like a film starts existing the moment it meets with an audience. As long as it's just in the editing room, like it's not a film yet. I feel like it only exists in that interaction. And in that sense, you cannot really forget the public, right? So I'm loving the public here. I'm loving just the kinds of people that are coming. There are people from... Yesterday, there was like a huge delegation from Puglia Sunchis, from a local institute that teaches Educación Intercultural Bilingüe. No? So they are studying to become teachers in indigenous languages, and they just all, instead of going to class, came to watch movies. And I love that. No, I love that there's like an involvement of the local community as well, and that this festival is really in dialogue with what's happening in town, not just like a visiting, you know, alien, but actually trying to interact with that.
Mm. And can you share about your film, how people can stay connected to you and your work, and how people can learn more about the festival?
Yeah, I'm actually right now in the development stage of my first feature documentary. So that's going to be still a very long process because it takes like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years. So we'll see. It's called IU, and we've been actually doing the like lab circuit. So going to laboratories, trying to work on the script, on the story. And we're probably going to start shooting next year. This is an observational project, so it's going to be probably about 2 years of filming with our characters, and then another year of editing. It's a long road. But the film that we have now kind of out is Rimanawasi, the short that we made about this Quechua radio speaker, and it's sadly not available online yet, or at least not everywhere. I don't think it's available in the United States yet. But from time to time, it is present at a festival or another. So we're going to look for something in California, necessarily. And
how do people stay
online
connected to you and keep a pulse on your work?
Yeah, well, I'm on social media, I guess, as a good millennial. So I'm on Instagram, Jim Sabogal, with an X. My name is written with an X. So Jim Sabogal. I felt like an elementary school student right now. Spelling in English was always like the worst. So you can follow me there. And just in general, follow the work of the festival. They're also very active on social media. Festival Cine Latinoamericano en Lenguas Originarias. And just, yeah, there's so many things happening in Peru right now in film. There's a Peruvian film that won an award at Berlinale in February called Raíz, made in Quechua here in Cusco. There's another film called Kindra that won the Festival de Mar de Plata, which is the most important Latin American film festival, last year. We haven't seen them yet because they're still in the festival circuit. They're not in cinemas yet. But there's so much happening. There's like a burgeoning community, film community. There's a lot of curiosity. I was so surprised at the amount of people who came to the workshop. I thought there was like it's a workshop, right? So I thought, well, 5 to 8 people. And there was like over 20, which was really lovely. I think there's definitely an interest, and there's just people have ganas de hacer cine. And I think if we keep creating and promoting these spaces, we will see the results.
And any last words of inspiration to aspiring storytellers and filmmakers out there?
Oh my God, such pressure. I would repeat the slogan of a festival that I love, that I went to last year, Docs Barcelona. La vida es un documental. We are surrounded by stories. If you start, you know, brainstorming, it turns out that there's like at least 5 that you have there in your family, in your own story, people you know, people you've seen. We are surrounded by so many things. It's about being disciplined. It's about being, you know, how do you say that in English? Consecuente, you know, like just following going through. With it, following through. It takes a lot of effort. But one thing that I believe is, for me, ironically, very inspirational, is to remember that making a film is always a community effort. That you are not on your own. You shouldn't be on your own. You have your people. If you don't have them, find them. They're out there. They're in workshops like this. They're in festivals. They're, you know, at your local cinema. Find fellow film lovers and start doing things together, because you're not on your own and you shouldn't be.
Soka Mati, thank you so much. It's been such an honor to speak with you, to learn more about your work, to talk about these much deeper topics that are really changing the way that we are understanding ourselves as Indigenous people, as people of the diaspora, and what our role is as both storytellers and people on the other side of the screen. And so may I wish you so much luck as a new doctor of anthropology and also on this road ahead for your film. So thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We're going to head upstairs and see what's on the screen. Tlasoka Mati, that was the voice of Dr. Jimena Malaga Sabogal. She's a visual anthropologist. And I'm coming to you from the Festival de Cine Latinoamericano here in Cusco, Peru. Tlasoka Mati. I'm Xochitl Bernadette Moreno, and this was this week's edition of Radio Olin here on KPFA's La Onda Bajita. Stay tuned.